Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and fleet services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This MLB season, FanDuel's Dinger Tuesday is back. And this year, all customers get a profit boost to bet home runs every week. So gear up to go yard all season long on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in select states. Opt-in required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including any token expiration and max wager amount. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly.
And I am your co-host, Austin.
And we're so excited to have you back. People have been missing you.
Sunshine is back, so am I.
Yay.
We're solar powered.
That is true. We are solar powered creatures. I'm sure a lot of you guys listening can relate. We're over the snow, over the cold, ready for spring. Gosh.
And it's been cold everywhere, not just here. Let's go. But just for the record, it's been like negative 25 wind chill in the Kansas City area, and it's cold.
Yeah, it was super cold. Last week, our kids didn't have school. It was like a second Christmas break, and then week after next is spring break. We're all sorts of confused.
Yeah, it's been wild.
I'm sure you all can relate. So before we get started, I have a quick favor to ask, which is that you just check to see if you are following Mama Mystery wherever you're getting your podcast or wherever you're listening so that you can stay up to date on new episodes. It's totally free to do this, and it just kind of helps us out.
Helps us out. And if you haven't hit a 5-star review, go ahead and ding.
Yeah, please. Whatever that was.
That's like me filling out all those stars. Oh, I said 6, I think.
Okay, we're going to move on. So
Today's story is one that you all are probably somewhat familiar with. There is a whole podcast dedicated to this story. There's also a show on Hulu dedicated to this story. Mm-hmm. But I can bet Austin probably doesn't know about this story. Have you heard of Amanda Riley?
No.
I didn't think so.
I mean, I have so many questions, but we're going to catch up later on all my questions.
Like questions about this story or just life
in general?
I have questions
real quick about different things real quick. Okay, number one.
I guess go ahead.
And if they just don't make the cut, we'll just chop this.
Okay.
Number one, did the Menendez brothers get out?
No.
Whatever happened to them?
So the most recent update, and this is kind of an interesting tidbit, but Eric's wife's daughter, her and I have messaged back and forth on Instagram. And she shares a lot of updates about the case and what's going on. So there is a new DA in California. So back in November, whenever it was, that the old DA announced that he believed the Menendez brothers deserved a new trial. Mm-hmm. That was right on the cusp of the election, and he did not win. So the new DA who took over for him just announced this week that he does not believe that the Menendez brothers should get a new trial. He declined or denied the habeas corpus petition.
So all hope gone for them.
No, it is ultimately up to the judge to make the final decision, and he is supposed to announce his decision next month.
Holy shit.
So we're just still waiting. Yeah, but
have
I will
update. Have you watched all the Netflix stuff?
On the Menendez brothers?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you watched the series where they reenact their life?
Yes.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. I watched that. I was that into that.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, that had me up to like 2-3 in the morning every night for a long time. I haven't finished the series though. Number two.
Okay.
You might not know the answer to this, and if you don't, that's okay. But I'm real curious about P. Diddy's attorney like dropping it.
Okay. I have seen a lot of stuff about this. So
this is all freestyle, guys. I did not tell Kelly about these questions.
No, this is good. This is a good update. Okay, so the Diddy case. Yeah, apparently his lawyer is withdrawing from the case, and there is a lot of speculation as to why, but nothing has been confirmed. So whatever I say here, just take it with a grain of salt. But I've heard two theories. Okay. One theory is that the attorney found in the discovery that there was a lot of like necrophilia or necromancy, which is like digging up bodies to do stuff with them, mm-hmm. weird stuff. And that there was like witchcraft in these parties. I mean, it's crazy to say it out loud, but also like you can't completely
can't count anything out, which is how weird this thing is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that was one theory.
And these are just theories.
Correct. Yes. And then the other theory, which I do think is pretty plausible, is that there were like child abuse allegations within the parties. And so I don't know the details. I mean, I think it'll probably come out eventually. I don't know, though. I mean, they could always conceal this case or keep it locked up. I don't know.
When does he go to trial, and when does all the charges that he's getting charged with go public and all that?
Well, the charges are all public, but as far as the trial, I don't know when it's supposed to start. I would hate to even say the date right now because it could change. It's so fluid. Yeah. So.
And what are all the charges?
Oh my God, I don't even, there's like a whole litany of them. You'd have to just go back and listen to the episode that I did because there was like 10 to 20 different charges. And there's so many allegations. I did hear Jay-Z, the person that accused Jay-Z of being involved to some extent, withdrew their case and that they may have settled outside of court or something. But I think Jay-Z was pretty thrilled by the fact that this person dropped it. So anyway, whether or not you believe that Jay-Z is an innocent guy, that's your own prerogative. I don't know that I trust literally anyone in Hollywood, truly anyone or mainstream media for that matter. And I feel almost kind of crazy saying that, but I think you would have to just be kind of naive.
I think you're kind of crazy to not believe that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think. Okay.
Tell me about Amanda Riley.
All right. Amanda Christine Riley was born Amanda Mineri on June 24th of 1985. She grew up in San Jose, California. And while details about her childhood are sparse, one thing was evident from the beginning. Amanda was magnetic. People gravitated towards her. She was highly charismatic, well-spoken, and had an uncanny ability to just charm her way into any social circle. From a young age, Amanda had a passion for cheerleading and dance. She thrived in environments where she could be the center of attention, and her enthusiasm for community involvement made her well-known, well-liked, And I think it was this combination of charm and athleticism and apparent kindness that eventually led her to cross paths with the Riley family, a connection that would change all of their lives in ways that no one could have possibly foreseen. So at this time, the Riley family consisted of Corey Riley, his wife, Alita Bernal, and their two daughters, Jamie, which was Alita's child from a previous relationship, and Jessa, which was Corey and Alita's biological daughter. And they were an average Bay Area family, or at least they seemed to be. And then tragedy struck. Jamie, at just 8 years old, was diagnosed with leukemia. The news devastated the family. Anyone who has ever cared for a loved one battling cancer, especially a child, knows the immense toll it takes physically, emotionally, financially, just mentally, everything. Leukemia is a type of blood cancer, and it meant that Jamie had a compromised immune system. So any exposure to illness, even something as minor as a cold, could be deadly for her. And because of this, she was forced into isolation. No birthday parties, no sleepovers, no school. Her childhood became a series of hospital visits, treatments, and separation from the world that she once knew. Alita, her mother, was determined to keep Jamie's spirits up, but it was really an uphill battle. The stress was overwhelming. Meanwhile, Corey was kind of emotionally detached, and over time, it became clear that he showed a noticeable preference for his biological daughter, Jessa, over Jamie. His involvement in Jamie's life was kind of minimal. While Alita fought for Jamie's health, Corey was distant, a pattern that would later become significant. Now, in the midst of this crisis, a well-intentioned family member suggested hiring someone to help Jamie with cheerleading and dance, which was an outlet to bring her joy and, you know, something to do in the safety of her own home. And the person they had in mind was Amanda Maneri. So Amanda was everything they were looking for. She was young, energetic, and passionate about cheerleading. She didn't just teach Jamie routines. She really bonded with her. She became a regular presence in the Riley home, spending time not only with Jamie, but also with Jessa, Alita, and even Corey. Amanda was not just a coach. She was a friend, and she became family. Now, as the months passed, Amanda's involvement in the Riley household expanded. She joined them for meals, holidays, and major life events. She helped out with chores, ran errands for the family, and even accompanied Alita to doctor's appointments for Jamie. She took Jessa on outings, offering to babysit while Alita focused on Jamie's care. And Amanda really ingrained herself so deeply in their lives that she was not just a guest, she was a fixture in this house. To Alita, it felt like Amanda had become an unofficial big sister to her daughters, someone that they could really rely on during the family's darkest times. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, everything changed.
Quick tidbit.
Okay.
You'll probably laugh because you know the case and everybody and their brother who knows it. But for me, normally you name the case the victim, but right now I'm trying to figure out, like, is she going to be the victim or is she going to be the opposite? Whatever that word is.
We're going to find out.
I know it. I'm just curious. There's got to be other people out there who haven't heard of this and they're like,
maybe, maybe not. 2 years after Amanda had become embedded in their lives, Corey packed up his belongings and left without warning, without any discussion. While Alita was at work, Jamie was the one to call and tell her mother that Corey had packed a U-Haul and was gone. It was betrayal that Alita never saw coming, but the real shock was still ahead. Shortly after leaving, Corey revealed that he was in a new relationship with Amanda. This teenager, the woman Alita had welcomed into her home as a friend, was now romantically involved with her now ex-husband.
No way.
And it didn't stop there. Corey and Amanda soon got married, solidifying this relationship that had seemingly developed right under Alita's nose. Friends and family were stunned. It wasn't just the age gap that was so unsettling. It was the sheer audacity of Amanda's calculated moves. The woman who had integrated herself into Alita's home, earning trust, and playing this nurturing role to her children, had systematically dismantled the family from the inside.
That's insane. I still don't know what's going to happen to her. Which one is she?
In the following months, Amanda's behavior toward Alita shifted drastically. She no longer played the role of a kind, supporting friend. Instead, she became aggressive, manipulative, and controlling. She frequently dismissed Alita's parental authority, making unilateral decisions about Jess's schooling, her extracurricular activities, and even her medical appointments. Amanda would intentionally exclude Alita from a significant moment in Jess's life, like planning events or outings, without even informing her. She would speak over Alita in conversations, belittle her in front of others, and subtly undermine her credibility as a mother. Amanda also made passive-aggressive comments, often framing them as concerns about Alita's ability to care for her daughter. And she would strategically use Jess's affection for her as a tool to further alienate Alita, ensuring that this young girl saw her as the more stable and reliable figure. The once cordial relationship between the two women dissolved into this constant battle for control, with Amanda positioning herself as the superior maternal figure.
This is insane.
There was even a time that when it came to school forms or paperwork, Amanda filled it out and wrote her name as the mother and didn't even put Alita on the pages at all.
Whoa. This is crazy. Like, literally from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. The tension reached a boiling point when Alita began noticing subtle but disturbing changes in Jess's behavior. The young girl, once affectionate and open, became distant and hesitant. Amanda and Corey painted Alita as the enemy, convincing Jessa that her mother was unstable and unreliable. And then came the most brutal blow. One day, Alita checked her mailbox and found legal paperwork. Corey and Amanda were seeking full custody of Jessa. Alita was stunned. And worse, she soon realized that Amanda was not just supporting Corey's custody battle, she was leading it. Amanda had meticulously constructed a false narrative around Alita's fitness as a mother, weaponizing personal information that she had gathered during their years of friendship. Every struggle Alita had confided in Amanda about was now being twisted and used against her in court. Now, what followed was a years-long custody battle that drained Alita emotionally and financially. Amanda and Corey painted Alita as an unfit mother, spreading lies about drug addiction and instability. They gathered false testimonies, leveraged their community connections, and manipulated the legal system to make Alita appear incapable of raising her daughter. The court believed them. At one point, Alita lost custody of Jessa entirely. She was only allowed one phone call per week, a monitored conversation. Her daughter was being raised by the woman who had betrayed her in the most unimaginable way.
I don't know if you're going to like cover this later. So if you are, how does it get to this point? Like, in terms of, is the mom just really busy and working a lot? And like, why did they not kick the chick out whenever shit's going south with their relationship? Like, this is just a family friend that kind of like lives with them, right?
I think it's just a testament to how manipulative Amanda was, because she came into this house and just kind of weaseled her way in, got close with Alita, but then at the same time, without Alita even knowing, she was becoming romantically more involved with Corey. And then she was probably having different conversations with Corey and Alita while listening to Alita vent about Corey. She's going to Corey and listening to him probably vent about Alita.
And saying the perfect stuff to piss the other one off, but enough to keep her in the...
Exactly.
So then if one of them goes to the other, it's like, hey, do you think we should make her leave? It's like, well, no, because of this.
And I don't think they ever were. I don't think they were going to each other, and that was the problem.
Interesting.
Amanda was like forming this wedge in their marriage until it was like, done. He's got a U-Haul. He's moving out. Okay. But Amanda was not done. She had more cards to play. In 2012, Amanda made a shocking announcement. She had been diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now, Amanda's announcement stunned everyone. Even Alita, despite the resentment that she felt towards her, couldn't help but feel some sympathy for a woman who had literally just given birth to a child and was now facing a terminal illness. Mm-hmm. So Amanda and Corey ended up having 2 boys together. But after the birth of their first son, she was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now, to document her battle, Amanda launched a blog titled Lymphoma Can Suck It, where she meticulously chronicled every step of her fight against cancer. Her posts were emotional, deeply personal, and often accompanied by photos, like selfies from the hospital beds, pictures of IV drips, and even moments where she appeared really exhausted from chemotherapy treatments. She described in vivid detail the side effects of the treatments, the emotional toll of facing a terminal diagnosis, and then, of course, her unwavering faith that kept her going.
This doesn't matter at all, but I'm just curious.
Okay.
The answer wouldn't matter. Was she like almost like an influencer and had a following, or was it just like she was just blogging this to, doesn't matter. I'm just curious.
Yeah. She was only blogging to her small community. So like, okay. It was only people within her church and her friends and family that knew. And so that's really who was reading the blog.
Okay.
But I mean, it eventually grew, but at the start, that was her audience. So Amanda, through the blog, shared tearful video updates, thanking her followers for their prayers and their support. She frequently posted about the miracle treatments that she was undergoing, detailing rounds of chemotherapy, radiation, and even alternative holistic methods that she claimed were helping to prolong her life. She wrote about her good days, her bad days, the moments she felt like giving up, and the times that she found new hope. To further gain sympathy, she posted testimonials from friends and family, these emotional accounts from those she claimed had witnessed her suffering firsthand. And in one post, she described how her young son curled up next to her in bed, asking if she was going to die. Another post detailed how her husband, Corey, had to pick her up off the bathroom floor after she had collapsed from the strain of treatment. In another post, she thanked people for donating to her cause, saying in part, quote, "I have to give thanks to some incredible human beings. In my last post, I mentioned Angie reached out through a mutual friend and donated her entire $730 commissions check for the month. Through her, Betty Ann's Bag reached out to her wanting to help, and they sent us a wonderful card with dozens of gift cards that people donated, people we have never met in our life. It still blows my mind the generosity of our family and friends, especially through church. But when complete strangers want to help, I can't even explain the emotions. What joy," end quote. In the same post, she shared pictures of her speaking publicly at her church. And there's actually like videos of this that have been documented of her speaking to her congregation. And she wrote, quote, "After sharing testimony with three other inspiring speakers, the same amazing group that came caroling and brought Christmas to our door last year approached me with cards, gift cards, and money. We are so grateful for all of it. This year, they went a step further. Amber asked me what we needed. I mentioned the only thing we needed was each other. We don't need stuff. We just want more time together. So any things that we can do to take the kids to do or experience together is the best kind of happiness. They really listened to that and gifted us so many fun new adventures to embark on. We got movie passes, a spa day, golfing, Billy B's, date nights, ice skating, Vasona lights. The list goes on and on.
I feel like this is all fake.
The opportunity to have memories and experiences with each other, friends, and family is the most special thing to us right now. And we are truly so grateful and humbled once again by God's goodness and your generosity. A special shout out to Lindsay, who maxed out her platelet donation this year in my honor. You go, girl. You're helping so many people, and I feel pretty special you do it for me," end quote. And then she described in another post this encounter that she had with a stranger on a plane. Listen to this. She says, quote, "When I ride on planes, I tend to freak people out with wearing a mask or looking half dead. So I try to break the ice with whomever sits with me. I immediately bonded with the nice lady next to me, who I quickly found out was in the last 6 months of her medical school residency. She was a doctor in West Virginia. We shared life stories, experiences, and laughs. Then after a really long flight and a short nap, we arrived in San Jose. Upon leaving the plane, she gave me a little folded piece of paper and wished me a Merry Christmas."
It's her life earnings for the next 10 years.
"As I exited the plane, I opened it, curious what this perfect stranger just gave me. A phone number? Facebook link? It was a blank check for $1,300. What? Who does that? She didn't even know my first name. I, of course, ran to baggage claim trying to track her down. I luckily found her and thanked her for being such a good person. I told her I had to ask why. She told me my story really inspired her, and she just knew she should. If that's not divine intervention, the crazy part is, I'm sure I just told her my treatments were expensive. I didn't tell her what they cost. So the fact that $1,300 is the amount put on her heart, which is the same cost as one of my treatments, just gave me chills. I, of course, was bawling in the airport and walked outside to pouring rain. I hope the doctors keep telling me a cure is more rare than rain in California. Sure been raining a lot lately. End quote. Now, her church community really rallied around her, sharing her blog widely and organizing fundraisers. People she had never met before were reaching out, offering financial assistance, prayers, and messages of encouragement. She even encouraged her followers to send gift cards and donations to help her family cope with medical expenses. The blog became an emotional lifeline for many, drawing in those who had lost loved ones to cancer or were battling it themselves. And it was a testament to resilience, faith, and hope in the face of despair. And then there was a video, a compilation of at least 92 photos of people from across the country showing support by holding signs that say #TeamAmanda with fight song playing in the background. Below the video, she wrote, quote, "You really learn who's there for you when you have nothing else to give. Although it hurt when some friends and family haven't really shown support, the amount of people following and back my story is something I couldn't have even fathomed before cancer. Thank you. You are #TeamAmanda," end quote. And then she documented her hair loss, ultimately shaving her head and posting pictures with the new look. But as the years went by.
Years. So this is going on for years.
Yes. I think the whole course was 7 years, I think. But as the years went by, some began to question the legitimacy of Amanda's claims. Despite her dire prognosis, Amanda seemed to defy the odds time and time again. And for someone who was battling stage 4 cancer, Amanda remained remarkably active. She attended social events, traveled frequently, and maintained an unusually high energy level. Her appearance also raised suspicions. While she had posted images of herself bald, supposedly from chemotherapy-induced hair loss, she was often seen with a full head of healthy hair soon after, and she never lost her eyebrows or her eyelashes. And some followers began noticing inconsistencies in her stories, details that didn't add up or posts that kind of contradicted previous statements about her condition. But before we continue, let's take a quick break to pay the bills and thank the sponsors of today's episode.
Madam Ram, starring Toni Collette, is a new podcast that tells the dramatized story of Georgia Frontier, a former entertainer turned owner and heavy hitter in the boys' club that is the NFL. After her husband's mysterious death, she shocks everyone by inheriting the LA Rams and taking the reins of major sports franchises, relying on her wit and astrological charts to make decisions. She turns the NFL on its head and to this day remains one of the most beloved, despised, and controversial figures in modern sports. This sounds dope. Madam Ram, the woman who took on the man's world and won. Follow Madam Ram on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now. I think that sounds dope. I want to check that out.
Go follow it and I'll read the next one. All right, so for Christmas, Austin got me a gift I had been eyeing for a while. It's an Aura ring, and this is not an ad for Aura, but the Aura rings are mostly used to track your sleep, and I love it because I'm naturally competitive, so I get a score every night, and I'm always aiming for the best possible sleep score. Well, last night, I got a score of 91, which is considered optimal. I think the highest score I've gotten ever is 95, and I don't know.
You were sleeping good as shit that night.
I don't know where that came from, but 91 is really good. And that's why I'm so excited to talk to you guys about Beams Dream Powder. It is a science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep. I am in love with this stuff. Just so you guys know, I'm never going to share something that I haven't tried myself or believe in. This stuff is actually so good. This product single-handedly changed the way I sleep for the better, and my Aura ring proved it. But I couldn't believe how great it truly tasted. All you do is heat up 6 to 8 ounces of water or milk and then use their frother to blend in the powder, and the drink literally tastes like a little dessert before bed. It truly tastes so good. that you forget it's like has a purpose other than just being good, you know, but it's guilt-free. It's available in delicious flavors like my personal favorite, sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, which I really want to try because chai tea lattes are my favorite, and the Beam Dream Powder original flavor, cinnamon cocoa, which is also very good. Each serving is only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar, but I swear you guys, this stuff tastes like it's a treat. I literally forget its purpose is to help me sleep. Other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and I don't know if I said that right, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling refreshed. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/MAMA. Use code MAMA at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/MAMA and use code MAMA for up to 40% off. And if you do try it, please message me and let me know how much you love it and what your favorite flavor is. Now, let's get back to today's episode. One of the first red flags came from within Amanda's own community. A nurse who followed Amanda's blog noted that some of her descriptions of chemotherapy treatments were inaccurate. Certain medications that she claimed to be taking weren't typically prescribed for Hodgkin's lymphoma, and the side effects that she described didn't align with standard oncology protocols. A cancer survivor who had undergone chemotherapy herself pointed out that Amanda's accounts of treatment schedules and recovery times seemed unrealistic. Additionally, an oncology specialist who was made aware of Amanda's claims noted that some of her medical jargon she used was either outdated or misapplied. A few concerned individuals attempted to verify Amanda's claims by reaching out to hospitals where she claimed to have been treated, but no records of her patient history could be found. And each time someone questioned her, Amanda had a convincing explanation for any discrepancies, often deflecting by accusing skeptics of just being really insensitive.
Well, it's really easy to virtue signal if you're faking this whole blog for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to be like, really? You're going to talk like that way about a cancer person with cancer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what she did. She just made them feel bad about it. And then in a twist that many would later recognize as a key turning point, Amanda made an announcement that sent shockwaves through her supporters. She was cured. After nearly a decade of battling stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma, a disease that, according to her, had been relentlessly attacking her body, Amanda declared that she was finally cancer-free, despite telling people it was terminal. She attributed her miraculous recovery to a combination of faith, alternative treatments, and sheer determination. Her followers rejoiced, messages of congratulations flooded her inbox, and well-wishers celebrated her miraculous healing that had taken place. But some people were not convinced. By this point, a small group of skeptics had been quietly investigating Amanda's claims. They combed through her blog posts, cross-referenced medical information, and reached out to oncology experts. And a key breakthrough came when an investigative journalist contacted hospitals and clinics where Amanda claimed to have received treatment, only to be told that no such patient record existed. Additionally, concerned individuals filed requests for verification with state medical boards and insurance providers, further confirming that Amanda had never been diagnosed or treated for cancer. There were no records of hospital visits, no evidence of chemotherapy treatments, no pathology reports, nothing to substantiate any of her claims. The people who had donated their hard-earned money to Amanda's cause began demanding answers. A few brave individuals confronted her directly. One woman who had donated thousands to Amanda's cause asked for specific details about her treatments, only to be met with vague and defensive answers.
That's wild that people were donating her thousands of dollars.
Yes. And there were people who were setting up plans to pay her like $700 a month just automatically.
And then, yeah, if you were on that gig and you were like, yeah, I'm paying you $700 a month, you would kind of want, like, I'm kind of invested now. I want like the report showing it.
Yeah. A former nurse in her church questioned inconsistencies in her chemotherapy descriptions, leading Amanda to just block her entirely. Another skeptic left a comment on Amanda's blog citing medical inconsistencies and asking for proof of her diagnosis, only for the comment to be deleted within hours. In response, Amanda became defensive, accusing them of insensitivity and betrayal. She lashed out at those who questioned her, claiming that they were trying to discredit her miraculous story. She deleted comments, blocked users, and just doubled down on her narrative. But the cracks in her story had become too large to ignore. Then came Nancy Muscatello. An investigative producer, Nancy was drawn into the story when a friend of Amanda's began questioning her claims. This friend had been growing suspicious for some time, but the turning point came when Amanda showed up at her house ready to swim on the same day she claimed that she had fluid drained from her brain. Watching Amanda swim in her pool without any signs of distress or recovery, the friend knew something wasn't adding up. So I guess Amanda had a little circular Band-Aid right behind her ear. Mm-hmm. And so when this friend asked her what the Band-Aid was for, Amanda was like, oh, I had to get fluid off my, drained off my brain today. And then was like, well, see you later, and just dove into the pool. And the friend is like, This does not make sense.
Yeah.
So determined to find answers, she joined a Facebook group called Exposing People Who Fake Cancer and came across Nancy Muscatello. But unsure of how to proceed, she sent Nancy an anonymous email detailing Amanda's story and her growing doubts, and the email immediately caught Nancy's attention. As an experienced investigative producer, Nancy recognized the red flags and decided to dig deeper, and Nancy's own sister had actually died from cancer, so she was familiar with the more typical protocols, the language, all of it. Nancy began meticulously combing through Amanda's social media posts, her blog entries, financial records, identifying inconsistencies and questionable transactions. She contacted hospitals and treatment centers Amanda had mentioned, all of which had no records of her being a patient. Nancy also worked with former donors who had shared suspicions and financial documentation proving Amanda had misused their contributions. And as Nancy's findings mounted, she compiled a detailed report and reached out to law enforcement. The evidence that she gathered was instrumental in triggering a formal investigation. But ironically, when Amanda caught wind of Nancy's investigation, she tried to sue Nancy for civil harassment, but the judge dismissed her case. Also, just to give you an idea of kind of where we're at in this timeline, at this point, a lot of people at the church began to notice that there were these inconsistencies, and Amanda then applied to be the principal of a private Christian school in town. And so when Nancy caught wind of this, she started investigating at the school and asking people at the school about Amanda. Amanda caught wind of it, and that's when she filed for the restraining order, but it was dismissed. So Amanda was very aware that Nancy was investigating her. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point out, and this is something I learned after I wrote this episode through the documentary that's on Hulu, but there was a family at this private Christian school whose son was diagnosed with a terminal illness. And Amanda gave this tour to this family who was wanting to go to the school, and their son was with them. And she was talking to the son about how she knows what treatment's like and has been there herself and this and that. And then, you know, offered to pray for them, like, while they were all standing there together. There was also another employee at the school who was fighting a terminal cancer, and the school held a fundraiser and split the profits of the fundraiser between the employee and Amanda because they were raising money for both of their plights, right? But they gave half the money to Amanda and half to the employee. The employee eventually died from cancer.
Oh. All right, this is probably really stupid. What would you even charge somebody with for something like this?
Yeah.
Because, like, isn't there culpability to the people who are donating the money to some degree? I don't mean to be effed up saying that, but, like, if you're putting money to somebody who has cancer, you would feel, I mean, they probably did feel that they had cancer.
Yeah, but they anyways, believed
what,
it.
What would the charge be?
Yeah, so we'll get to that point, and I'll answer that question once we get to that point. But by 2020, the FBI had taken notice, and they launched an inquiry into Amanda's fraudulent activities. Investigators subpoenaed her financial records, uncovering that the money she claimed was used for treatments had instead funded vacations, luxury purchases, and personal expenses. And law enforcement officials also found fraudulent medical documents and fake prescriptions that Amanda had used to convince donors of her illness. So with Nancy's research serving as a foundation, authorities built a solid case against Amanda, leading to her eventual arrest and prosecution. In 2020, law enforcement began investigating Amanda Christine Riley for fraud. The FBI uncovered an elaborate scheme that had spanned nearly a decade. She had fabricated her entire illness using stock images from medical websites, staging photo shoots to make it appear as though she was undergoing treatment. She had forged medical documents, lied to her community, and stole over $100,000 from unsuspecting donors. So when the truth finally came out, the outrage was swift and unforgiving. The same people who had once supported Amanda now felt betrayed and humiliated. Some former donors expressed deep regret, with one woman stating, "I drained my savings account for her medical expenses. I believed every word she said, and now I feel like a fool." Churches that had rallied around her condemned her actions, with one pastor publicly apologizing for advocating on Amanda's behalf. Community members who had tirelessly raised funds for her medical costs demanded explanations, and many took to social media to express their anger. One person wrote, "I shared her story with everyone I knew. I begged people to donate, and I feel sick knowing it was all a lie." I mean, you also have to remember the lengths that this girl went to push this narrative. She shaved her effing head. She shaved her head. She would show up to the ER for something random. She'd be like, "Oh, I just have back pain," or just some minor thing. And then she would take a bunch of pictures while she was in there. And then she would steal like products from within the emergency rooms, like the actual rooms. She would steal stuff like tubing and just whatever she could get her hands on.
And I obviously got it was fraud, but like I was thinking she was just typing these stories. There's a whole narrative that goes into creating the story.
Babe, she went to church one day and faked a seizure and urinated all over herself.
No way.
Yes. In front of her kids, in front of her family, her friends, faked a seizure and peed her pants.
God.
Mm-hmm. Even those who had defended Amanda initially found themselves really grappling with the betrayal. Some had severed friendships over her, believing that skeptics were just being cruel, only to realize that they had been deceived. Before her sentencing, Amanda's world began to unravel as law enforcement tightened their grip on her fraudulent scheme. In the wake of the investigation, former supporters turned against her, and even Corey Riley, her husband, faced backlash for standing by her deception. And some questioned how much he knew or could have known, while others assumed that he had been manipulated just like everyone else.
No, you knew all of it.
You had to freaking know that there's never been to a single chemotherapy treatment. You've never met a single doctor.
You were in on all the bullshit. That's a ridiculous claim.
Exactly. I agree. I believe there's no way he could not have known that it was a lie.
Not one ounce.
Well, he largely avoided public scrutiny, refusing to make statements, but the damage to his reputation was irreversible. Yeah. Amanda's family also faced intense scrutiny. Her parents, who had publicly supported her throughout this supposed illness, were confronted by angry donors and betrayed friends.
Have a hard time thinking they weren't on the train too.
Mm-hmm.
A real hard time thinking it.
Yeah. Some people speculated whether they had been complicit or merely deceived like the rest of Amanda's followers. As investigators built their case, Amanda attempted to shift the blame, insisting she had been overwhelmed by the attention and unable to admit the truth. But the evidence was overwhelming. Financial records, fraudulent medical documents, and statements from those that she had misled all pointed to a carefully orchestrated deception. In 2022, Amanda was sentenced to 5 years in federal prison after pleading guilty to one count of wire fraud. Prosecutors revealed that she had defrauded donors out of more than $105,000 from 349 donors that we know of by falsely claiming that she had cancer and soliciting money for non-existent treatments. Now, I want to point out, though, that this does not include the amount of gift cards, tickets to things, cash that was given to her. That $105,000 number is only what they were able to trace through, like, the wired transactions,
right,
or people donating through her website, which is what made it a wire fraud, which then made it a federal crime. So during her sentencing, they detailed the extent of her deception, emphasizing the emotional and financial harm that she had inflicted on those who had supported her. And all of these people showed up to the court when she was sentenced. Some people were expecting her to maybe get like 18 months. When she got 60 months, some people were like stunned because they just thought,
yeah,
they would go easy on her, but they didn't.
And especially because it's 105 grand, but I think you're locking the person up more than for the money, for the principle of the whole thing and yes, like how shitty of a person you are.
Yes. And many people felt like if she didn't get a harsh sentence, she would just go do this again.
For sure. Because that's that person. Like,
exactly.
If you will go to those lengths.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't end here.
And imagine if you just went to those lengths in positive areas. Like, yeah, if you're willing to completely fabricate a story to the point you're pissing your pants and faking a seizure in front of a bunch of people, mm-hmm, imagine if you just put that much effort into like
something good,
selling candles, or you know what I mean? Just doing some productive shit with your life.
Yes.
You could probably make way more than the 100 grand over 5 years.
Yeah. And you wouldn't it's be 20 in jail grand for a year.
It's a side hustle and you don't have to fake a whole fucking illness.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is. The court heard testimonies from individuals who had sacrificed their own savings to help Amanda, believing that they were assisting a dying woman. So the judge ordered Amanda to also pay full restitution to her victims, ensuring that those who had been misled would at least see some form of justice. I don't think they're ever going to see a dime of that money, unfortunately. But for Alida Bernal, Amanda's former friend and one of her earliest victims, the sentencing was a bittersweet moment. The woman who had once infiltrated her family, stolen her husband, and manipulated her daughter had finally faced justice. But no prison sentence could undo the damage that Amanda had done. In the years following the scandal, Alida worked hard to rebuild her life. She fought to regain a strong relationship with her daughter, Jessa, who had been deeply influenced by Amanda's manipulation. And with time and patience, Jessa began to see the truth, and their bond slowly mended. Jamie, Alida's older daughter, remained resilient despite the turmoil that had unfolded in their lives, pursuing her own passions and healing from the emotional scars left by Amanda. Alida really focused on advocating for others who had been victims of fraud, using her experience to warn people about the dangers of misplaced trust.
Imagine the moment that Amanda got convicted of all this and it all came out. Imagine the like validation that Alida would feel for the first time ever.
Yes.
About something so major. It'd be like, Jessa, I told you, look at this.
It'd yes.
It'd be so many examples. You'd be like,
or all these people who ever side-eyed her because they heard Amanda tell her that, or tell them that Alida was a bad parent, yeah, or an unreliable parent. And
talk about the biggest sigh of relief ever in a way for her.
Yeah. But how do you ever really recover from that?
You can't get it all back.
Like,
all
how do you ever trust somebody again?
Yeah, it's wild.
At Amanda's sentencing, she apologized to the judge and victims, saying, quote, "This is the worst thing I have ever done and the worst mistake I could have made." She said, "I don't sleep well at night because this haunts me daily. I can't even look myself in the mirror without feeling ashamed, and I am so sorry."
Now you're sorry you got caught.
Exactly. Corey, her husband, has not faced any charges related to the fundraising scheme, and he has since filed for divorce.
Right.
Now, Amanda Riley began her sentence at FMC Carswell, which is a federal prison in Fort Worth, Texas, that houses prisoners at all security levels and specializes in prisoners with mental and physical health needs. She has since been moved to RRM Long Beach, which is a residential reentry facility in San Pedro, California. In August of 2024, a San Francisco Chronicle report detailed how Amanda continued lying when she got to prison. And according to prosecutors, she was transported to an emergency room 24 times during her first 18 months in prison.
She probably just needs to be locked up for life.
Her complaints ranged from rapid heartbeat to chest pains to a little cut on her head. And in 2024, her attorney filed a motion for compassionate release, asking for a reduced sentence because of new medical issues that Amanda claimed to have. But the judge denied the motion after the government opposed it, saying, quote, "pointing to evidence that defendant is once again feigning illness," end quote.
Oh my gosh.
because she was reportedly holding her breath during oxygen saturation readings to manipulate the result. And according to The Guardian,
this chick's nuts.
Three doctors and a nurse who treated Amanda during her incarceration have suggested that she might suffer from factitious disorder, more commonly known as Munchausen syndrome. Now, if you know, Munchausen by proxy is when a mom feigns an illness in her child, or, you know, something similar to that. Yeah. Munchausen by proxy, or Munchausen syndrome, is when you just fake illnesses within yourself. But a fourth doctor even made an official diagnosis. And for those of you who may not know, Munchausen syndrome is a psychological disorder in which a person pretends to be sick or purposefully produces symptoms of an illness, usually to gain sympathy or attention, which is what I'm sure Amanda's goal was. Her scheduled release date is December 4th of 2025, according to the RRM Long Beach inmate website, because yes, of course I looked. Now, here is a picture of her. And I'll share these. I just wanted to show you, Austin, but I'll share these pictures.
Bald.
Where she's bald. But the crazy thing is, like, she's bald, but you can see the hair. Like, right. It's like she's got a 5 o'clock shadow on her head. My dad underwent chemotherapy, you guys. Like, I've seen what chemotherapy does to a person. This is not it. But how crazy is it that she was willing to go that far, posting these pathetic pictures.
Hooked up to all these tubes.
And she's probably just... what I imagine is her just going in there, finding all the stickers and all this random shit to just stick on herself and then fake a sad face. It's like Augie when he tells us, make a sad face.
Make a sad face.
She makes a sad face so she can get her selfie and post it for the attention.
The money.
And I really think that she just fed off of that attention and that sympathy. Like every like, every dollar that was donated, every comment that was like, you're so strong, just probably validated and fed this monster within her to continue perpetuating this lie.
So the fact that the Netflix documentary has been out, it's this huge thing, mm-hmm. right? She is going to, like, there's no doubt she's going to get out in December, and then she's going to have to immediately start her life living a new lie as a different person, because you're not going to be Amanda Riley,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're going to be a completely different person. You're going to have a complete made-up life story. And that's your new base story for your new life free from prison. And you're going to continue to be a bullshitter mm-hmm. forever.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is that this is not uncommon. There's also another story making the rounds about Belle Gibson, who was...
That's not Mel Gibson, is it?
No, Belle.
Yeah, it's not Mel?
No, not Mel Gibson. Belle Gibson from Australia. She was an actual influencer who was faking cancer and was telling people that she was healing herself through these organic whole foods. And she created this app called The Whole Pantry. Apple,
I've heard of that.
Put it on their Apple Watch, like as a pre-installed app. She had a book, this book publishing deal with Penguin and some other one. And I mean, she was like an influencer in that space. And then it came out that she was faking her stuff too. She was also faking seizures. Like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Like, you're successful. You have, what do you need?
But she was successful based on a lie. The whole story of success was based on a lie. And if you're wondering if I'm going to do an episode on that story, yes, I am. I have it written, ready to record. So we'll do that one.
I got you. Okay, so the Healthy Pantry wasn't like a real successful business.
It was very successful, but it was found out. Yeah,
it wasn't. That was all related to her story, which was fake.
Yes, and it's really sad when you think about the people who were diagnosed with cancer, turned to her book for, you know, support or inspiration or guidance, and they were probably turning their nose up at Western medicine treatments.
Yeah.
To go just eat raw organic foods thinking that was going to heal them. And like, it just makes you wonder how many people made their condition worse because they listened to Belle and believed what she was saying. That's a whole nother story for another day, but.
It's nice to come back on an episode that doesn't have death. And it's just like, I kind of like the crime and ends
like nobody is dying. Yeah, I hear you. Because these are just more like, It's baffling, and it gives us a moment to just sit here and judge somebody because we're all doing it. That's what we're all doing right now. We're judging you, Amanda, from prison. Yeah.
Well, good job, babe.
Thank you. We missed you. Back. I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah. Mama. Mystery. Out.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.